Tanuri had to put up collateral for the deal, Italian stock, Assicurazioni Generali, that's Assicurazioni Generali, Generali, worth on the Milan exchange 41.6 billion lira. But it raises certain question. His stock amounted to 1.6% of the firm's capital. Few stockholders at the end of 1980 had that much, only five, Mediobanca, Eurolux, Banca d'Italia, Servizio Italia, fiduciary of Banca Nazionale del Lavoro, or BNL, and the Banca Commerciale Italiana. From whence came this packet from Lugano? Note that among the many elements involved in this particular deal, that is to say the collateral put up for this deal, was a subsidiary of the Banco Nazionale del Lavoro, or BNL, an institution that we have looked at in the past in connection with arms sales to Iraq. Continuing. From what Tanuri told several close collaborators, that stock came from the Libyan government. The certificates were signed by a tiny Milan finance house, Klaus Fien, C-L-A-U-S-F-I-N, which was a front. So the question rests, who was the rich owner? A disconcerting answer is found in a document dated September 21st of 1981. Writing it were Tanuri and Faron. In 18 pages were discussed the progress of Operation Amid, A-M-I-D. There, on page 8, it turned out that the stock really belonged to two Italian citizens, Achille Caproni, C-A-P-R-O-N-I, and Flavio Briatore, B-R-I-A-T-O-R-E. They deposited it at the Lugano subsidiary of the Banca Bruxelles-Lambert, where it formed Tanuri's guarantee. The upset was inevitable. Achille Caproni, son of the aviation pioneer Gianni, and Flavio Briatore were in fact protagonists in some of the recent pages of the Black Chronicle of North Italy. Together, they were involved in the investigation of Bergamo into clandestine gambling and now wanted men. It is said they fled to the Isola Vergini, V-E-R-G-I-N-I, where they have refuge. In fact, the gambling was just a cover for gathering businessmen with interest in the clandestine arms traffic. The games were a lot heavier than poker. In the first few weeks of January of 1981, Tanuri and Faron were working on getting a loan with the stock. But with the rhythm of payments executed by J.P. Morgan of Geneva for Faron and coming from the most part from Credit Suisse in Geneva and Paris must have been unsatisfactory. Faron, at the end of January, was stopped with $13,150,000. Tanuri had no choice but to look for new associates. On January 7th, Glauco Partel telexed Vincenzo Giovanelli, G-I-O-V-A-N-N-E-L-L-I, noting the presence in the market of an offer of three atomic bombs, whose assembly was now in progress and would be ready in the first week of March. The test, said the telex, will be effectuated in a neutral European country in the presence of experts from the selling countries and those of the buyers, unquote. It added, again quoting, the power of the three units is identical to that of the original Japanese one, around 20 kilotons, unquote. This appears to refer to the materials assembled in the three containers in Geneva in 1980. But they apparently wanted to kill any chances of the bombs getting into the hands of an extremist state. Partel was close to the U.S. At the beginning of 1982, Giovanelli got in contact with the Israeli consul in Milan, telling of Syria's interest in the bombs. I would interrupt here. Vincenzo Giovanelli is also one of the people involved with Stibomb. In Radio Free America 20, we took a look at the proposed sale of three 20-megaton, not kiloton, but 20-megaton bombs to Syria. I wonder whether perhaps those bombs might be the same three mentioned here and that somewhere along the line on either of these two stories, that is to say the one we accessed from Le Matin from 1984 in Radio Free America 20 or the story here, I wonder whether perhaps megaton and kiloton got switched in the process. Not a conclusion we can draw, but obviously a question that needs answering under the circumstances. Continuing with the article, Faron, meanwhile, withdrew from the operation. The Israelis made it clear to the Saudi family that Mazed Rashad Faron would be taken for furnishing nuclear material to Libya. Faron denounced his ex-associate Tanuri in Switzerland and France, lamenting that he lost the $13 million he lent, forcing him to sell at auction certain goods, including his Paris apartment. In one Partel telex of 12th of March, he wrote, the Saudi sheikh Awani El Faisal has deposited in the Deutsche Bank $800 million for the three bombs. The three bombs are being sold for $1,200 million. Lebanese persons are in Europe for this transaction, unquote. But apparently it didn't go through. A later telex, dated April 21st of 1982, speaks of the bombs going to the Far East. Somehow, the Trade Development Bank in Luxembourg was involved, as it often is, in atomic negotiations. In another article that Dave has researched, it's mentioned that the bombs apparently wound up in may very well have wound up in Iraq, which is an unnerving consideration under the circumstances. Again, I point this out because there have been, for a long time, elements of U.S. intelligence heavily involved with some of the very terrorists we're told they should oppose. And again, the key names here, we have Mr. Tanuri, we have the brother of Gait Faron, and Glauco Partel in this aborted deal. It should also be noted that there was a fair amount of apparent doubling as well. That is to say, some of the people involved in the deals apparently helped to see to it that some of the deals didn't go through. I am worried, though, that if, in fact, the October surprise investigations or any of the interrelating investigations that the late Joseph Daniel Casolaro termed the octopus, I'm wondering if any of those go through, whether perhaps we are going to see a provocation, a terrorist incident, and the invocation of the Rex 84 Operation Night Train martial law scenario. The last article I'm going to read for the prepared portion of tonight's program comes from the San Francisco Chronicle of Wednesday, August 14th of 1991. This is a story, Dateline San Jose, Costa Rica. It's by Martha Honey and David Myers of the Chronicle Foreign Service. It's headlined, U.S. Probing Drug Agents' Activities in Costa Rica. I would take note that Martha Honey, along with Tony Avergan, her husband, one of the two plaintiffs in the Christic Institute suit against some of the principals in the Iran-Contra scandal. Excuse me. The article reads in part as follows, this again from the San Francisco Chronicle of Wednesday, August 14th of 1991. A Drug Enforcement Agency agent is under investigation by U.S. authorities after being accused of a variety of illegal activities that include arranging a key player... One more time. A Drug Enforcement Agency agent is under investigation by U.S. authorities after being accused of a variety of illegal activities that include arranging for a key player in Oliver North's Iran-Contra network to be secretly flown out of Costa Rica, where he faced trial on drug trafficking charges. The DEA agent, Juan Perez, is also being investigated for allegedly violating Costa Rica's narcotics laws, improperly running sting operations, torturing prisoners, receiving money from drug traffickers, and paying off local anti-drug agents. Perez, who was transferred to the DEA's Chicago office in 1990, could not be reached for comment about the allegations. The Iran-Contra figure, cattle rancher and CIA operative John Hull, suddenly jumped bail in Costa Rica in July of 1989 and later surfaced in the United States. Details of Perez's role in Hull's escape were pieced together by two reporters and by San Francisco-based private investigator Josiah Thompson, who became involved after being hired by the defense lawyer for Juan Noriega, a small-time Peruvian cocaine trafficker caught by a DEA sting run through Costa Rica under Perez's supervision. Note that this is Juan Merino Noriega. That's not Manuel Antonio Noriega. He's a big-time Panamanian cocaine trafficker. Also note here, before I continue with the article, that Josiah Thompson, also an individual who's done some writing about the Kennedy assassination, although I'm personally not very impressed with his book, which is called 6 Seconds in Dallas. There's some good information, but it doesn't go nearly as far as it could have. Continuing with the story, Costa Rica is an important transfer point for smuggling Colombian cocaine into the United States. A recent report by the Costa Rican government estimates that 2,000 kilos pass through each month. The country's role in the drug trade expanded during the 1980s, protected and facilitated by a CIA-run Contra operation aimed at toppling Nicaragua's Sandinista government. A special drug commission of Costa Rica's Legislative Assembly has cited links between international drug traffickers, former Panamanian dictator Manuel Noriega, and North's Contra supply network, which included Hull, former U.S. Ambassador Louis Tams, and ex-CIA station chief Joseph Fernandez. Skipping down into the article, Perez's alleged role in Hull's escape stands out as the most startling incident in the DEA's history there. A Washington-based official from the DEA's Office of Professional Responsibility said, quote, "This is more serious than the rest of the charges we're investigating and cannot say..." One more time. "This is the more serious than the rest of the charges we're investigating and cannot say there is absolutely nothing to it," unquote. In February of 1989, Hull, 70, who holds both U.S. and Costa Rican citizenship, was arrested in Costa Rica for drug trafficking and other crimes stemming from his role in aiding the Contra resupply network from his rural cattle ranch. Claiming to suffer from a serious heart condition, he was released on $37,600 bail. In mid-July, he suddenly disappeared, later surfacing in the United States, where he now lives. Details of Hull's escape were revealed by, among others, two former Costa Rican narcotics agents, a politically prominent Costa Rican collaborator with the Contras, CIA and DEA officials, people close to Hull, and Perez and U.S. congressional sources. Hull has refused to discuss the escape, other than to say he was assisted by some, quote, Costa Rican friends, unquote. However, evidence gathered by Thompson and the reporters indicates that on July 18th of 1989, Perez arranged for Hull to escape to Haiti aboard a twin-engine Seneca 421 plane contracted to the DEA, U.S. registration number N8044Q. Sources say Hull continued on to the United States aboard a commercial flight. Perez was assisted by Dagoberto Nunez, a Cuban-American businessman who ran Frigoríficos de Punta Arenas, a Costa Rica-based seafood export company. Testimony given to a Senate Foreign Relations Subcommittee headed by Senator John Kerry, Democrat of Massachusetts, indicates that the firm was set up by the Medellin cartel to launder drug money and smuggle cocaine into the United States. I would interrupt that Dagoberto Nunez, or Moises Nunez, also along with John Hull, one of the defendants in the Christic Institute's lawsuit. And we talked about Frigoríficos de Punta Arenas in the miscellaneous archive series dealing with CIA connections to the savings and loan scandal. Continuing with the story, 6 months after he fled, Hull was charged with murder by Costa Rican authorities for his role in the May 1984 La Penca press conference bombing that killed three journalists. A Costa Rican court later dropped the drug charges against Hull for lack of evidence. Earlier this year, the government requested his extradition to stand trial on the murder and other charges. U.S. authorities have yet to move on the request. Skipping down, on March 2nd of 1990, Perez and three other DEA agents ran another shipment of cocaine through the private farm of Victor Wolf, W-O-L-F. A right-wing cousin of Costa Rican President Rafael Angel Calderon, Wolf heads a paramilitary organization called Fatherland and Truth, which has been linked to death squads in Guatemala, as well as the CIA and the Contras. Skipping down, a final outstanding question in the Perez affair is why Calderon wrote an unusual last-minute appeal to the DEA protesting Perez's transfer to Chicago. While his own Vice Minister of Security, Eric Koberg, was demanding Perez's removal, Calderon asked that he be allowed to continue his, quote, distinguished and effective work, unquote. In an interview, Calderon insisted that the signature was not his, although the letterhead is from his office. He has admitted having a private lunch in New York with Hull, the beneficiary of Perez's travel arrangements, after he had fled Costa Rica and before the letter about Perez was written. One more time. He, that is to say Calderon, the current president of Costa Rica, he has admitted having a private lunch in New York with Hull, the beneficiary of Perez's travel arrangements, after he had fled Costa Rica and before the letter about Perez was written. This obviously is a very important case and a very important development vis-a-vis the ongoing investigation of the Iran-Contra scandal. I don't know whether this will add, it should add, it adds more weight to the body of evidence supporting the Christic Institute's allegations. Whether or not it has any concrete effect on the appeal of the Christic Institute's case remains to be determined. I would note here a couple of things. Again, the alleged collaboration of a DEA official named Perez in the escape of John Hull. The DEA has long, elements of DEA have long worked in connection with the intelligence establishment. RFAs 26 and 27 go into that. The aforementioned Henry Arsan of the Stibom Arms for Drugs ring, headquartered, by the way, right above the Banco Ambrosiano's Milan, Italy offices. The head of Stibom, Henry Arsan, also worked for the DEA for many, many years. Take note here also of the fact that a right-wing cousin of President Calderon had worked actively with DEA and CIA in the Contra support effort. Also, interestingly enough, a letter with Calderon's signature on it. He claims that the signature was not his, although the letterhead was his, that appealed for Perez to be retained in Costa Rica by DEA. Also take note here of the fact that Calderon admits having lunch with John Hull after he had fled Costa Rica. And, of course, President Calderon is not President Arias, who had been pressured to go softly on John Hull. So it remains to be seen what comes of the Perez investigation. But once again, there is more information leading credence to the Christic Institute's hypothesis, although, unfortunately, the Christic Institute has been roundly pilloried and at least officially discredited. That concludes the prepared portion of tonight's broadcast. I'm going to take a musical break now.